I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs. You can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side. Put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Friends, it's that time of day. Thursday has come quick this week. And we are heading into In the Garden. We've got Master Gardener Ed Bajarski on the line coming to us from Juneau. He has all your end of September gardening questions to be answered. And we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. Their phone number is 772-3464. They've got bouquet subscriptions and lots of what you need for the garden. That's the Flower Farm. And we've got Ed Bajarski on the line. How are you, Ed?
Well, I'm pretty good, Oren. And garlic planting is proceeding very nicely. And looks like we're supposed to have some good weather this weekend, so folks can do that if they're not planting tulips or harvesting or doing some other stuff or moose hunting or who knows what they might be doing now.
Yeah, right. There's a lot, so many ways to be gathering sustenance this time of year. And so garlic is on your agenda, though?
It is indeed, yes. So I've been planting... my goal is to get 2,000 cloves in the ground before we head off to a far-off and sunny place next week. So that's, we're doing pretty well. I got about 1,400 in so far. Definitely got the garlic planter warmed up, and all of the fertilizer has been getting mixed in. So for folks who are getting ready to plant garlic, and they might be doing that in the beds where they've harvested all their potatoes, perhaps, or some other crop. Some of my beds are new garden boxes just built this summer. So they have not had any other crops in them. So I enriched them to begin with a good layer of horse manure down at the bottom, then topsoil on top of that. And I'm mixing in balanced organic fertilizer in the top 4 inches or so of these beds that the garlic will grow into.
Uh-huh. Okay, so horse manure, then the soil, and you're going to plant bulbs in the soil above the manure, and then you'll do some organic fertilizer above the topsoil, and the garlic will grow through that.
Yes, exactly. And the garlic is planted shallowly. So, but first you got to have your garlic.
Yeah.
So hopefully, whether the, you know, local gardeners saved some of their best garlic from their crop that they planted last year that we harvested back in late July and August, or they ordered some, from somebody down south or elsewhere. And, so I did exactly that, saved lots, and I ended up having to order more just because I ran out. Since I want to expand, and I'm carefully breaking the bulbs apart into individual cloves, which I will plant, And as I go, I'm sorting out the biggest ones. So depending on varieties, some of them may have large and small cloves in a bulb. So I choose out the biggest ones for replanting and eat the small ones. So that way I'm trying to plan for, with the help of all the good fertilizer, and we hope a good winter, and we hope for good sunshine next spring and summer, to have a bigger crop. So again, bigger cloves planted should result in bigger bulbs to be harvested next year.
So when you say a good winter, what kind of winter does garlic like?
Well, so garlic, this, and we're planting hardneck varieties of garlic, which are more more hardy, more tolerant of colder winters than the typical supermarket garlic, which is usually California white, and is a softneck garlic.
Right.
So we talked about that. The hardnecks are the ones that we get scapes from, in usually in June and into early July, where the softnecks don't have that. The softnecks have an advantage in some ways in that they tend to store longer. And if you're interested in that, too, they also can be braided more easily. Braiding the hardnecks is a challenge. You almost have to hammer the stems to soften them some so that they can be braided. But, I mean, again, that's not something I worry about. So I want hardiness. And as far as what they want for a winter, we can hope for, once we get them planted, covered with visqueen, well, covered with some seaweed and then some visqueen, that either we get a sort of a consistent snow cover, which is kind of rare anymore around here. You know, if we had 4 to 6 inches of snow that lasted from, say, the end of November until mid-March, and then there was springtime, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last winter we had almost no snow. We had a little bit of snow early, but then all the snow disappeared by late December. And January, February, we had, in Juneau at least, had little or no snow. And I don't know that you had much either.
Right.
And, of course, there's no snow left on the mountains either. So that, all of that, a consistent snow cover would be great. So since we can't necessarily plan on that, having that extra layer of insulation, the garlic can tolerate being frozen, just like, but it's the freezing and thawing and freezing and thawing that is really hard on it. It's hard on tulip and daffodil bulbs, as well as a lot of perennials and even some trees and shrubs. So kind of a consistent winter would be good. We can hope for that.
Yeah, I think it's, am I remembering right that it's an El Nino this winter predicted, which I think means maybe a little wetter, a shade warmer than last year. Which last year was pretty darn cold, actually, for quite a long stretch.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, we had cold weather, and the frost penetrated fairly deeply because we had no snow cover to insulate.
Right.
So having a little warmer, you know, with snow cover or warmer without snow cover. I mean, the winter before, all our snow disappeared by the middle of January, and the ground was thawed, and I was digging and making garden beds in by the end of January. And it stayed that way until we got our usual dump of snow in March.
Yeah. Wow.
Sort of typical lately, by which time it really didn't matter. You know, that snow, the snow didn't really help one way or the other that year,
right,
other than putting some snow up on the mountains, which is a good thing. So anyway, just planning on it. And there's other things you can do, too, if you want additional insulation. We've talked about using spruce boughs or hemlock boughs to add some insulation over the surface of perennial garden beds.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do the same thing over the top of your garlic bed. And again, and that slows the freezing and thawing action again, which is the killer.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, so if this winter was going to be a lot of snow that melts from rain right after, coming and going, are we going to want to kind of cover our beds with some plastic to keep some of that extra water off that might be around? And then maybe on top of that plastic, layer up some things like boughs or something to kind of add a little thickness between the cold air, just to kind of keep things a little insulated?
Yes. So again, and it, you know, you're even to putting the boughs on top of the beds first before you throw the tarps or visqueen plastic over the top of that. Uh-huh. Again, all of that to give that extra insulation on top. If you had some old blankets, like fleece blankets, polyester blankets, something like that, you could throw that over the ground and then the plastic over the top of that. So yeah. All of those add that extra bit of insulation. So to improve our survival odds.
I love it. I love the image of that. You know, like, I mean, I think people who are growing garlic really, really love their garlic. They're like their little garden children, these little gnomes that pop up with their curly little hats, you know? And so over the winter, you're tucking them in, you're making them a nice cozy sleeping bag with an old blanket and a tarp over the top of it. I think that really helps you care about those plants.
Well, and here, you know, Southeast Alaska is a different climate than, well, obviously different than California, like around Gilroy, where it's hot and dry in the summertime, and they have to irrigate. This summer there was a little bit of irrigation needed, which is not a bad thing. But again, having the technology, which we are depending on, certainly, we're using a bunch of plastic and other stuff to make, whether we're making hoops and other things to help warm up the soil, anything we can do to warm the soil during the growing season is going to help us.
Totally.
So, again, keeping the soil from freezing so quickly and or thawing quickly also helps. So, again, let's get back to the mechanics of the planting. So having our bulbs that are broken apart, we've got our cloves sorted out, the ones that we're going to be planting. We've got our fertilizer has been worked into the soil. And so I plant thousands of cloves. Mm-hmm. So I've built myself my own multiple hole punching tool. I call it my sextuple dibble. I should send you a picture of that sometime here.
Yeah.
But literally I've got six pegs on a piece screwed to a piece of 2x6 with a couple of handles on that. So I can punch holes, and they're spaced out about 6 inches apart, both ways. So I can punch six holes at a time, and I can do this, and I've got these 4x12 or 4x16 foot garden boxes with soil. So I can punch holes, and then I can come back with all my cloves and plant them into each hole. So they're nicely spaced quite uniformly, which is good to look at and efficient.
Brilliant. I love it.
Once I get them in, and the mantra, just like with planting tulips and daffodils, is pointy end up.
Right.
And, you know, when you break your cloves apart from the bulbs, you can see the bottom end where there's kind of a little scar where there were roots, where they were attached to the base plate where the roots were.
Right.
And the top has, some garlic tends to be more rounded, some is more pointed on top when you break them apart. But so you just set them in there, and what we're aiming for is to get them about 2 inches below the surface.
Okay. Yeah, that was going to be my question, is your punch, how deep is it punching?
Exactly. So, I mean, my pegs on there are about 4 inches long, but and I shove them in as hard as I can. Mm-hmm. You know, I push them in there, and then the soil kind of falls in around them if it's hopefully kind of loose. And I've had my soil has been covered with plastic. Since I built these boxes and filled them with soil, some of them had cover crop plants growing on them that I chopped down and let them start to break down before planting.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so once I get these, all my bulbs in the beds and labeled, because I'm trying to keep track of varieties, and I've got, what have I got? I think a dozen varieties this year. I'm trying to get down to a few less than usual. But we'll see how that works. And then I lightly rake the soil over so the cloves are covered. I'll actually put a little extra compost or a little extra soil just to make sure that they are under the surface.
Mm.
And on top of that goes the seaweed and then the visqueen overall.
Perfect. Awesome. Oh, that's a
You don't have to worry
nice
about
bed.
Watering this stuff, although one of the boxes, a box I planted today, compared to the other ones that I've been planting this week, the one box was quite dry, but I'm not too concerned. There will be moisture enough that will wick up out of the soil into the boxes from below. Yeah. And once we uncover them, there's enough soil moisture there. I'm not too concerned about that.
Okay, and maybe we can cut in there and come back from here, but we do have a call that's just called in who's hoping to get a question in for you. And so let's slide on over to the phones here to line one. Line one, hello there. You're on the air with Ed Bajorski.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I'm not sure if you've touched on this before, but I was looking for a good way to rejuvenate or repurpose some old and tired and probably root-bound potting soil from the summer. And I was kind of thinking about putting it in with my compost, but just looking for ideas on that.
Hmm. Okay, interesting question. I'm sure there's probably lots of folks out there who have some soil that they're currently kind of disappointed in, and now this time of year when we're looking to sort of prepare beds, revitalizing soil is probably on people's minds. So, Ed, what do you think about that?
Okay, so I did not hear any of that, any of his question.
Oh.
But if you're, you know, from what you've just said, what to do with some soil that maybe didn't grow as many potatoes or cabbages or carrots
yeah.
as you were hoping for?
Yeah, sorry about that. I think I had his line kind of, yeah. We're kind of getting some issues on the line there. But so he's wondering, he's got root-bound soil from this summer that is kind of tired is the way he described it, and he's wondering what's the best practice to kind of amend soil in such a way that when you're using it in a bed you can trust that, yeah, this kind of nutrient depleted soil is going to come back to life and be of good use to you.
Okay, several possibilities. First, I mean, compost, if it's available, mixing in compost. And whether this is homemade compost, that's hopefully good and rich, has lots that one could hope that there's a bunch of worms in there, that's a good indicator that it has some nutrients in there. Or if you're buying compost from your local retailers, and I had some that got kind of damp, there were some holes in the bags of the compost, and when I was spreading this on top of the garlic beds, it was full of worms. I mean, you might have 100 worms in a handful of this compost.
Wow.
So that's a good indicator. So, and what you want, as far as quantities go, 1 to 2 inches thick on top of a bed, on top of the soil, and work it in. You know, and again, just mix it in the top 6 inches. You know, you don't need to go deep.
Mm-hmm.
You have access to, and say, well, God, if your compost isn't, you think isn't very well broken down, then you might instead want to bury it deeper, you know, dig trenches in your boxes or beds and bury it in there. So, again, let the worms and the soil microorganisms finish the breakdown process.
Mm-hmm.
Organic fertilizers. So, again, if there, so hopefully some of that is available locally. Is worthwhile, and depending, you know, if you're planning for certain crops, some of your different bags may tell you how much to use of that fertilizer, whether it's 2 to 3 to 5 pounds per 100 square feet of fertilizer. You can, I mentioned I chopped up some cover crops plants that I grew on beds, and so, like, with some of these, as soon as I harvest the garlic in late July, early August, I tend to plant cover crops on them, which is a mixture of peas and beans and vetch and some oats. So what that does, it takes up the nutrients that are left in the soil, plus growing a bunch of organic matter, which is then chopped in, you know, near the end of the season.
Mm.
So that will help improve your soil. The beans and peas are nitrogen fixers, so they're pulling nitrogen fertilizer out of the air.
Oh, great. So you're gathering up nutrients from the soil before they get depleted by runoff or rain or whatever, and then you're creating organic matter just through pulling nutrients even out of the air, like you said. And then you just chop those right back into that same soil, and they break down and restore those nutrients?
Yes. And again, so those, and one of the things the cover crop plants can do, they can pull, because the roots grow down, they can pull more nutrients up from deeper in the soil. So that's a good thing. And then once they break down, then that material becomes available to the plants.
Mm-hmm.
mentioned seaweed. You know, seaweed is always good whenever you can get it, and there isn't very much on the beaches yet. But once we get some fall storms, whether it be whether it's a south-facing beach or a north-facing beach, depending what's available to you, you know, work seaweed in. And seaweed on the surface is nice because it does act somewhat as some insulator, although it can also hold moisture. You don't want to pile it right on top of plants like perennials. You want to be careful to go around the plants because it can hold a lot of moisture. Mm. But put the seaweed in, you know, say you're mixing in some of this not fully composted compost, and throw some seaweed in there also, again, that really stimulates the worms and the microorganisms. Mm. And if your soil is really sandy, which is kind of probably a pretty rare thing in Petersburg, I know, it tends to be more muskeg. Mm. You know, so if you've got really sandy soil, you add organic matter. If you've got really organic soil, you add sand, you know, to help improve the drainage.
Okay, so maybe to kind of summarize some of that for this guy, if he's got kind of depleted soil that's a bit clumped together, he described a bit root-bound, he would want to add compost in the amount of a couple inches and chop that in, probably add sand to improve drainage, seaweed as the time approaches, and just kind of... and maybe even bury in some seaweed and compost, depending on its level of decomposition and readiness to use. And then that should kind of give those beds a good fighting chance to have a new life.
Right. And cover it. And then, again, you know, if he's doing that this fall or now, you know, now until the ground freezes, whenever that happens, if it happens, cover the whole thing with plastic. To stop the leaching. You know, we're going to get rain. I've gotten a couple inches of rain this past week, which was needed, certainly. But we don't want all that rain to leach out the nutrients that we are mixing into the soil or that may be remaining in the soil. So, again, if you put plastic over these garden beds, all my beds that are going to be vegetable beds, if they don't, whether they have garlic in them this fall, they get covered. If they don't have garlic in them this fall, they get covered. Again, to prevent that leaching. And that helps keep the soil a little warmer, a little longer. So again, the worms and the soil microorganisms are working to break down whatever other materials are in there and make them more available to the plants in the springtime.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a big takeaway for listeners from this week's show is when you're preparing your beds, you're working your soil, you're giving things a best chance starting now to be ready to grow in the spring. Covering those beds is a big, a good move, especially on a winter that might be like the one coming our way. It helps stabilize the overall temperature and keep some of the nutrient leaching at bay. And sounds good.
Yeah, and again, you know, so I'm sure if somebody didn't ask it, they should have asked it. You know, do you use clear plastic or black plastic?
Mm.
So that was interesting. I did just that with some of these garden boxes that I built this summer. I had some of both. And those beds that had the clear plastic on them, there were some weeds growing in there from the old horse manure or wherever they came from or in the soil. Because there's no weed-free soil around us here. I mean, we can't, even if whether we buy some stuff that some of the local contractors may call topsoil, it's going to have weed seeds in it, you know, where it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
So those beds that I covered with black plastic definitely were different. And it appeared that the soil underneath was better broken down. It was quite interesting. Hmm. And there were no weeds for me to pull out.
Wow.
First, that may mean that those weed seeds are just laying there dormant for next spring once I uncover them again, that they will sprout sooner or later. But that was interesting. And if what you have, I mean, I scrounge and scavenge plastic from construction sites, among other places.
Mm-hmm.
So whether they're covering over their something they're working on, covering their concrete, covering their bundles of lumber or sheetrock, whatever, doesn't matter. I'll use that to cover a garden box. So whatever you can get, use it to cover, But again, then in the first, as early as possible in the spring, if the snow melts off, if it wasn't clear plastic over the winter, put the clear stuff on in the spring so that the soil will, the sun will warm up the soil, and that will give us a head start of, well, 1 to 2 to 3 weeks earlier planting.
Uh-huh. Okay, so switching to a more sunshine-friendly one. Okay, we have a caller that just called in, and as a heads up to Ed and the caller, we just have about 3-4 minutes left in the show, unfortunately, so if you can keep your question sharp, caller, and the answer brief, then we'll be able to fit it in. Go ahead, line 3.
Hi, thank you. Just a quick one. I'm getting two different stories. I want to know what's the best time to transplant perennials. Is it in the spring or the fall?
Okay. And I'll go ahead and let her hear the answer off the air, and we'll go okay. for it there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Actually, spring or summer or fall can all work. Ideal, one of the concern about transplanting perennials later in the season, like now, is they get somewhat anchored in the soil so that they grow some more roots to anchor them in soil so that frost heaving doesn't push them up and out of the ground. And that's where having the, you know, now the soil is still pretty warm and not too wet yet. So soil, the plants are going to be growing roots into the fall as long as the ground isn't frozen. I mean, I'm still planting trees, so for the same thing. But at the same time, once I get them planted, make sure they're, I water them in once at least, then maybe Mother Nature will take over from there. But I'm also mulching them. So whether this be wood chips or seaweed or some other kind of mulches that you might have, again, 2 to 3 inches of mulch around the plants over the roots so that they will stay warmer for longer and continue to grow. And we have talked about in the past, but at least peonies as one perennial, hardy perennial, are, it's a good time to plant them. So again, they can be growing roots, and then they take off at the, start to grow at the normal time in the spring, rather than planting a bare root peony in the spring. Somebody else just asked me about rhubarb. Can I transplant it now? I said, sure, go for it. You know, rhubarb is tough stuff, but again, it certainly benefits by having some mulch on it so that the roots will get themselves anchored. Because otherwise, when it, if we get freeze-thaw in October, November, December, you know, those plants, get, if they're not anchored well by good roots down, you know, they can push up out of the soil, and then they can freeze, and they can dry out, and they die.
Mm. Okay. There you go. Freeze-thaw is the thing you got to watch out for then. Okay. Well, it's been lovely having a few callers. I hope that answered that last caller's question nicely. And I'm afraid we're just about out of time for today, but we're going to pick this conversation up next week. And we'll carry it forward. It's, time flies when you're having fun. There's a lot to think about this time of year, preparing beds, planting garlic, but we will pick this conversation up this time next week. Does that sound all right, Ed?
All right, Aaron.
Okay. And, we'll talk to you real soon. All right, everybody, that's been In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski. And tune in next week. We'll be able to pick up where we're leaving off this time of year, getting your beds ready, planting your garlic, and more. So we'll be back this time next week. Coming up next. Whoa, and we want to give one thank you there again to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. Much appreciated. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, 772-3464. They've got potting soil and compost and lots of good stuff. Their number again, 772-3464. That's the Flower Farm. So, coming up next, it's the presentation before the Juneau World Affairs Council last week from Petersburg's own and NPR's internationally acclaimed correspondent, Peter Kenyon. Sure.